From KBIA News in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. This week, we're talking about bringing elk back to Missouri with guests from the Missouri Department of Conservation. We'll cover the program that brought elk in from Kentucky to repopulate southeastern Missouri, how the herd is doing, and learn more about a bull elk that was poached in December. Our first guest is Barbara Keller, a resource scientist at the Missouri Department of Conservation. She's worked on the Missouri Elk Restoration Project from the beginning in 2011. When were elk last sort of naturally in Missouri? What happened to them?
Sure. It would have been the late 1800s would have been the last time that we had elk in Missouri. Elk were once present throughout much of eastern North America, but with the arrival and settlement of Europeans, the range of elk in eastern North America gradually began to shrink westward. And Missouri was actually one of the last places that you saw elk in eastern North America, but they did go extinct here by the late 1800s.
Did people just shoot them all?
That was one of the problems. So overhunting as well as habitat conversion were the issues.
So conversion to sort of
agricultural land.
Why was this a good moment to bring elk back into Missouri? I imagine, you know, it's got to be an extremely complicated process to reintroduce a species to a place.
It is. We first began exploring the possibility for elk restoration here in Missouri in the year 2000. So there was a feasibility study that was conducted to determine if it was feasible to restore elk to Missouri. And so we looked at where on the landscape would that be feasible and is now the right time. At that time, we decided to wait a few more years. But then we were seeing that Arkansas was having successful elk restorations. Kentucky's elk restoration was going very well. So in 2010, we began to re-explore the possibility for elk restoration, and we did decide, or the Missouri Department of Conservation did decide at that time to move forward. So we began trapping elk in the winters of 2010 to 2011, and that was the first time that we brought over elk here.
And what are the benefits to Missouri of elk restoration? You know, they were sort of not here for 100 and
sure.
some years.
Well, there's an intrinsic value in restoring a species to an ecosystem that was removed. There's a value in recreational opportunities that elk restoration opens up. Elk viewing, as well as maybe down the line, we might be able to have elk hunting here in Missouri. And so that some of the reasons why we are interested in restoring the population.
And how did you choose the area of Missouri? What made that the best space for the elk?
It was very important to us to choose the right place. And so there was a lot of research that went into deciding where exactly on the landscape we could restore elk. The area that we chose was a three-county region. It's Carter, Reynolds, and Shannon counties in the Missouri Ozarks. This area was chosen because it has low road density, it has a low amount of agriculture, has a low human population density. And so it was chosen because of its ability to minimize human and elk conflicts. Certainly, when we did have elk here on the landscape in Missouri, we would have had more elk in the northern portions of Missouri, but that is no longer a feasible place to restore an elk population because of the high amount of agriculture and the low amount of public land that we have in northern Missouri. And this area in the Missouri Ozarks does have a high amount of public land.
So originally, would elk have sort of roamed all over Missouri?
They would have been present throughout Missouri, yes.
And what did people in that area say when you started talking with them about elk? Because I know whenever animals and people come into contact, especially an animal that hasn't been around, it can generate benefits and also some issues or concerns.
Certainly, there was concern from the people in the areas where we're going to restore elk. If elk maybe were going to be on their land, causing damage to their property. They did have concerns about that. But there were also people that were really excited about the prospect of having elk in their area where they could actually go and see elk in the area that they live. And so certainly there were some people who were not for the elk restoration. But as a whole, we had a majority of people throughout Missouri that were in favor of restoring elk to the state.
And when you're going to restore an animal, do you need to get a vote or consensus from the population in that area, or is it just more of a conversation with them?
Well, we did have public meetings where we did have conversations with the local people in the counties where we were going to restore elk. So we did communicate what we were planning to do to the local people. We did surveys not only of the people in the area where we were going to restore the elk population, but also statewide, because this is the state's elk population and not just the locals' elk population as well.
And the elk are restored on Missouri Department of Conservation lands.
They were released initially on a conservation area, the Peck Ranch Conservation Area, which is owned by MDC.
And how big is that area?
I believe it's 26,000 acres.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty large.
And so these elk were trapped in Kentucky originally and then brought over?
Yes, southeastern Kentucky. Kentucky has a population of about 10,000 elk, so they have a very large elk population. And we do not intend to have a population that large. We intend to establish a population of about 400 to 500 elk in this three-county region.
And I know there's been a lot of talk about when people will be allowed to hunt elk. There are a lot of people enjoy hunting. Is that something that looks like it could happen in the near future?
We certainly plan to use hunting as a population management tool for our elk population. We do obviously need to be sure that our elk population is large enough and reproducing at the right rate for us to have a harvest of elk. And so we're monitoring the population to determine when it might be the right time to have an elk season. It's certainly something we plan on having in the future, but we just don't know when is going to be the right time yet for that to happen.
What's sort of the ideal population for hunting to begin, or a ballpark population?
Really, there's no ideal population, but we can certainly begin removing a few bulls from the population before we would start removing, say, the female segment of the population. So when we do have an elk season, our first inaugural elk season, it will probably be a low number of bulls that we'll be removing. And then we'll increase the number of tags that we'll have year to year as our elk population grows. So we're probably going to start off very small with regards to our elk hunting season, and we'll be able to increase that as our elk population increases.
How many elk were originally brought in? And the program, they were brought in between 2011 and 2013?
That's correct.
How many of them are there now?
We brought in a total of 108 elk, and we estimate that the population is currently between 110 and 120. We've been pretty stable with regards to population growth. And any sort of restoration of wild animals to the landscape, you are going to have some mortality of those animals that you bring over because it's very stressful. We held elk in Kentucky in holding facilities for 90 days for a health quarantine to make sure that the animals that we were bringing over were healthy. And then we held them in our Missouri holding area for an additional 30 days. So that was 120 days that these animals were held in captivity, and that is very stressful to them. So you expect that you're going to lose some animals when you have to do that sort of handling of them. So I think where we're at right now with stable population growth is actually pretty good for a restoration of this type. I do expect that over the next few years, we're going to have some moderate population growth. We should start seeing the population grow a little faster within the next few years.
Have there been little elk babies?
There have been every year. Elk are born in late May, early June. And we have had elk that were bred in Missouri produce calves every year. And that's something that we try to monitor year to year. Survival of our calves is always going to be a bit lower than the adults. But we've been having about half of the calves that are born year to year survive. And that's pretty typical for Western elk populations.
Mm. Nature is hard.
It can be. Mm.
How many babies do you think will be born this year?
Well, as part of our ongoing research project with the University of Missouri, we captured elk this past winter, and we actually used an ultrasound on them to determine if they were pregnant. And it's very exciting that all of the female elk that we were able to use the ultrasound on were pregnant.
Wow.
So we're expecting at least 30 calves to be born this year, if not more.
And when the elk experience mortality, do they just get a disease and die, or do they, I don't know, fall off a cliff? I don't know what happens to elk.
There's a variety of different mortality factors that can affect a wild elk population. The largest mortality factor for our population is actually a parasite called meningeal worm. It's also called brain worm. And this is a parasite that white-tailed deer carry, and it actually doesn't negatively affect white-tailed deer. Mm. They excrete the larvae of this parasite in their feces, and then a snail or slug actually has to crawl across the feces and pick up that larvae, and then an elk or a deer will consume that snail or slug, which they just do inadvertently as they're foraging throughout the environment. It might be on a blade of grass that they consume, and that's how it gets into the elk or the deer. Now, in the deer, The parasite really, again, does not cause any negative effects generally. But when it gets into an elk, which is not the typical host species, it kind of goes haywire. Mm. And it can cause a lot of damage in the central nervous system. And so this has been an issue, one of the largest mortality factors throughout elk populations in eastern North America. And it certainly has been the case in our population here in Missouri. But the other populations in eastern North America, such as Kentucky and Arkansas, also have this parasite. And it really has not caused population declines or caused the population to go to extinction. So we expect this parasite to play a role in the mortality in our elk population and perhaps slow population growth a bit, but we don't expect it to cause population declines or to cause our population to go to extinction.
And I think you do a lot of radio collaring and tracking of the elk. What is it like when you, you know, I guess you tranquilize them and then you get in, you put on the collar. Mm-hmm. What is it like to be that close to such a huge animal? Like, what do they smell like? What do they feel like?
It's thrilling to be that close to the elk. And certainly one of the most exciting parts of being an elk biologist is when you get to actually handle the animal. Of course, it's a very tiny part of what I actually do. But it is thrilling. It's very exciting. It's also very nerve-wracking because you have darted this animal and it's sedated. And now you're responsible for making sure that everything goes correctly and that it remains healthy and that you haven't negatively impact the animal. And so luckily, we've been very successful with our captures. Elk do have a distinct smell. It's a very musty kind of odor. And I think it's one of my favorite smells, actually. I'm sure some people would disagree, but they do have a distinct smell. And they're very large animals, especially when you approach them, you know, very closely. Our females are 250 to 300 pounds. Males can get upwards of 700, 750 pounds.
That was resource scientist with the Missouri Department of Conservation, Barbara Keller. Next, we'll hear from David Hassenbeck, the Elk Program Manager with the Missouri Department of Conservation Wildlife Division. He spends a lot of time managing the day-to-day aspects of the Elk Restoration Project in southeastern Missouri. In the Elk Restoration Zone, I understand that it had to actually be prepared for the elk. That was an area that hadn't supported elk in a really long time. How did you prepare the land for them?
We've always been very active with habitat management in the area, but knowing that the elk were coming, we kind of stepped things up a couple notches, and we basically dedicated some existing open land that had been managed under an assortment of goals, and we switched over to managing most of the open area within that zone, directly targeting elk forage, as well as we're conducting timber management and some other specific things that we're doing just to benefit habitat for the elk. But basically, it was we tried our best to prepare the timber and our open foraging areas for the elk with some specific seedings.
What is sort of the ideal food for elk, and what are they totally crazy for, and what did you have to restore to the area?
Well, elk are a lot like deer in that they're fairly general in what they utilize in the forest, and they can get by just fine on the different wild plants and acorns and vines and trees and et cetera out there in the timber. And if we would have released them into an entirely forested landscape, they would have been just fine. But the elk, however, more so than deer, prefer to have grass when it's available. So what open ground we had on public land and what open ground that we were managing, assisting private landowners with that had elk goals, we basically tried our best to enhance and create the best forage available on that open ground, because if that's where the elk wanted to forage anyway, we could provide it to them. And by doing that background habitat work, that was a big part of the success in the elk staying around the immediate area of the release, which is what we've experienced over the 3 or 5 years since we released the very first elk. They've done a very good job of staying right around the immediate area where the releases were made. And that's kind of a testament to our management staff and some of the habitat they had available to them.
I know that there were some concerns from landowners that the elk would be destructive on private property. Have you come up against that?
Well, I can tell you that early on with the restoration program, I was a private land biologist on the east side of the restoration zone over on the Reynolds County side, and I had universal support with the private landowners I was working for, and people were excited about the prospect of an elk restoration. And now that the elk restoration is here, and I'm serving as the elk program manager, I can tell you that across the board within the elk zone, private landowners are very supportive and very excited. Many people are actually managing just for the elk, so we aren't getting a lot of complaints. But should we ever get to a situation, and we probably will, where we have an elk on a pasture where it's not wanted, or if we start getting some issues maybe with a fence or some issues with some of our other pastures on private land, we do plan and intend to respond immediately and assist those landowners with whatever we can do to help. So we've had a few mild instances of maybe an elk passing through a pasture where the folks may not necessarily welcome the elk, but the elk have never stayed around long, and we've had no serious complaints to this point in time.
And why do you think people support the elk restoration? Is it because people want to hunt one day, or do they see a natural sort of value to it, or could it bring more tourism and commerce into the area?
I think all those points play into the public excitement, but most of our landowners in this area own their property, or there is a lot of recreational ownership, and folks that tend to buy and manage property for recreational reasons tend to be very conservation-friendly, very wildlife-friendly. Now, some of those folks like to manage their property for hunting purposes, and some of those folks just enjoy having wildlife on their property, and we see both cases. So I think most of the excitement is built around Missouri citizens' interest in wildlife, and then also our communities and our businesses around here are also recognizing that having elk in the area is one more thing that appeals to the tourist economy in the area, and the local economy is probably going to benefit over time as the elk become more and more popular.
And what is the local area like for people who may have never been down to where the elk restoration zone is?
Well, the elk restoration zone is actually the ruggedest, less populated portion of the Missouri Ozarks in the southeastern part of the state. It's portions of Reynolds, Shannon, and Carter County. And this is the area that's got the lowest road densities in the state. It's the area that's got the highest percentage of public land ownership, least population. So basically, these are heavily forested, rugged topography. About 85% is basically public land. Most of the local economy is built around either the timber industry, as far as cattle production, and tourism is a very large factor in this part of the state. So we're basically located in the deepest part of the Missouri Ozarks.
That was David Hassenbeck, the Elk Program Manager with the Missouri Department of Conservation Wildlife Division. And this is Intersection on KBIA. I'm Sarah Shariari, and this week we're talking about bringing elk back to Missouri. I spoke with Kelly Straka, a state wildlife veterinarian with the Missouri Department of Conservation. She did the necropsy on the elk that was killed by a poacher in December. I just wanted to start off talking about, I think, the story that we've all heard toward the end of last year, which was the poaching of a male elk. And you, as a veterinarian, did the necropsy on that animal. Can you tell me a little bit about what you can tell us about those events?
Sure. It is an open investigation, so I can't say too many things. But what I can say is the adult bull elk came into my lab the morning of, I believe it was December 30th, and it was clear to see right away that he was in excellent body condition. It was a pretty fresh carcass compared to some of the ones I deal with, so I knew it was going to be a good necropsy in terms of being able to learn a lot about that animal and how he was doing previous to his death, how he was doing on the landscape. So that was the one good thing about that one case.
And we're talking about a really big animal here. How was the body found and how was it brought to you?
Yeah, so the elk was actually discovered by a hiker who was out hiking and observed him. And his, as came out in the public news, his antlers had been, and part of the skull plate had been removed. So it was pretty clear to see that this was not your typical traumatic death by any means. So the animal himself was loaded up into a trailer and brought to the Columbia lab from a number of conservation agents and other MDC employees that helped move an animal that size into my lab in Columbia. So it was quite the cooperative project, you can say, to get that animal up here.
And tell me a little bit about your job. You're a veterinarian, and so you work with living animals, but you also do all sorts of necropsies. How did that become part of your work, or
yeah.
How did you get into that?
You know, it's funny. I'm not shy when I tell people that I really do think I have the best job in the state, which there's a little guilt. There's a little guilt admitting that, because I do feel like I get to do so many different jobs on a daily basis, so I never have the same thing twice, which is really exciting for me. So as a veterinarian, yes, I help our biologists in the field, working with any research animals. Anytime we capture or immobilize animals, I get to help on those projects. But then on the other side of things, too, if we have an animal that's either found dead or a landowner's worried about it and wants to know what happened, that's part of my role, too, is trying to figure out kind of the CSI aspects of it is the way I look at it. You know, a little bit more forensic work, trying to figure out how this animal died, and if it's a disease, is it a concern to either pets or livestock or other wildlife? Is that a concern as well? So that all falls under sort of my purview.
And what are some of the sort of health challenges of moving a wild animal a long distance? And then they were young animals too, weren't they?
We had a number. There's more than you can imagine. It's part of my job. So there are obviously regulatory considerations. Mm-hmm. You know, anytime you're moving animals, you have to be very cognizant, very aware of any diseases or any things that the incoming state wants you to look for. So we work really closely with other state agencies to make sure that we're meeting any sort of disease testing requirements that they may have. As well as the federal government has certain regulations on animals that cross state lines. So there's the regulatory aspects. As a veterinarian, there's obviously you want to make sure you're minimizing stress. You want to make sure that those animals are going to be comfortable. You want to make sure that the temperatures are going to be adequate. So when we transport them, how we transport them, all of those factors come into play. Also, with our timeline, the timeline we had to work with these animals, we brought them over basically when the cows are calving. Mm. So we had to make sure to minimize stress, because we don't want anyone to start calving on a trailer. And if there are any calves, as we had that final year, we had a calf born en route.
Wow.
So how do you protect a newborn calf when it's in a trailer full of adult animals, you know, that are otherwise stressed out? So there's a number of things to be worried about, I guess you could say, anytime you're dealing with these kind of movements.
So the elk herd has been out there for about 5 years, and is their health overall good, and was this bull elk that was poached the first death you've seen among the herd?
Their health overall, especially when you talk about their nutritional status, is incredible. These animals are great. There is a public viewing route, so the public can go down. You can drive along these public roads. MDC has got it all marked really nicely. So you can see them, and you can see that they are doing very well, again, because I think of all the habitat work down there. There is intensive monitoring that still goes on with the herd. We are still radio collaring those animals. I know you're going to be talking to our biologists, and they talk quite a lot about the research that's still going on, all the monitoring and oversight of those animals. A lot of that's being led up by the University of Missouri, too. Mm-hmm. So it's a great partnership there. We do watch these animals very closely. And anytime we do have a mortality, and we have had a number of mortalities, they try to get those carcasses to me if they're in good enough condition. Otherwise, if I'm on site, I'll do a necropsy down there. Alternatively, we can do what's called a field necropsy, where our biologists have been trained to take certain samples from me so we can screen for different mm-hmm. diseases and pathogens that might be there.
And what has killed the other elk? Is it just accidents or parasites?
Yeah, it varies. You know, we had a tough year in 2012. There was a horrible drought. And we did have a number of animals, especially the young, the calves of the year that year, struggled greatly because, again, just because of drought, hard, you know, nature situations. We also have a parasite that's known as brainworm that has been taking a pretty significant number of our animals as well. And that's a parasite that seems to exist happily with white-tailed deer and snails. And it does not cause, for the most part, any disease in deer. But if elk inadvertently graze on these snails that are infected with the parasite, they can actually get really sick and succumb to the parasite.
Wow.
So it's something that we are watching really closely and actually doing some research on, trying to get a better understanding of how we can break that cycle, you know, of having a snail infect an elk. How can we break that cycle without doing anything drastic like getting rid of snails or getting rid of deer? I mean, those recommendations just don't work. We have to take an ecosystem approach to controlling the spread of disease in the landscape.
And this may be a silly question, but for the elk, do you, you know, give them rabies shots, or would you deparasite them?
It's not a silly question. I get asked that a lot. I get asked constantly, you know, how often I vaccinate, mm-hmm. how often I treat them. And generally speaking, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
We don't.
They're truly wild.
We do not vaccinate wildlife in the state of Missouri. I do not do anything like that. The only thing I will treat is if we have, I was talking about this earlier today, if I have darted an animal and I notice a significant wound, I'll clean that wound out. But we don't routinely even give antibiotics to the animals we handle unless there's a really good reason. If we've caused some kind of trauma by the handling, We'll give antibiotics for that, but routinely, absolutely nothing. These are wild animals, and we respect them for that. And it's a controversial topic because there's a lot of people that say, well, you know, we need to doctor them as best we can. But I argue that these animals have evolved and adapted to their environment over years, and they are supremely good at healing. They really are. I've seen a lot of animals with horrible injuries that do very, very well. So you sometimes wonder, are you running more of a risk of causing more problems by interfering with their natural healing processes?
Was the bull elk in December the first to be killed by hunting or violence?
The first poaching case that I know of, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, again, a clear poaching situation. The antlers and skull plate were removed. Nothing else was taken from the body. And to me, it was the most horrible disgrace to that animal because he was in his prime. I mean, he was an adult, beautiful bull. And just to let that all go to waste is a horrible thing to see.
That was Kelly Straka, a state wildlife veterinarian with the Missouri Department of Conservation. Finally, in our exploration of elk reintroduction in Missouri, I talked with Brad Hadley. Brad is a conservation agent with the Missouri Department of Conservation in Shannon County, and he works on the case of the bull elk that was poached in December. What can you tell me about the state of the investigation now?
Primarily just that it is an active and ongoing investigation. We, you know, would certainly reach out to any kind of public input that we could. If somebody knows anything, why, we'd love for them to give us a call.
And what's the process of these investigations like? I'm sure we've all seen lots of crime shows, but I don't think I've ever seen a show about investigating the killing of a wild animal illegally.
It's one of the things about it is see a crime show on TV and, you know, it's solved within just an hour or half hour show, but they're obviously highlighting crimes against social norms or people. And with wildlife crime, most often there's not any witnesses to the event other than the people that participated. Now, sometimes that's not the case, but most often it happens in remote areas and there's not anybody else around. There's not surveillance photos. There's not all those kind of things that you can rely on. So public input, somebody hears something or anything like that is really critical in these kind of cases.
And is there anything else that people should know or that they can do for the investigation or that they should know about the elk?
We've had a lot of input from the public. We've had a lot of calls. Probably every department employee across the state has been asked, hey, what's going on with the elk investigation and that kind of thing. The world's a social place anymore with all the media. And I would just hope that if anybody has seen anything or heard anything about this that they think might be irrelevant to just report it, because we have done a lot of work on it, and a lot of times we're just looking for a last little bit of information that kind of ties things together. So if somebody has heard or seen something they think might be helpful, I'd encourage them to call our Operation Game Thief hotline.
That was Missouri Department of Conservation agent Brad Hadley, and that's all we have today on reintroducing elk in Missouri. Thank you for spending your time with us here at Intersection, conversations in our community. I want to thank our producers, Katie Eisterhold, George Schramm, and Christopher Beyer. And of course, thank you to our guests, Barbara Keller, David Hassenbeck, Kelly Straka, and Brad Hadley. Our music is Montana Skies. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection, here on KBIA 91.3 FM.